You may know that I teach a weekly Parsha class here at Ikar in Los Angeles every Thursday at noon, Pacific time. You're welcome. We've got folks joining us virtually from places as far away as Japan on Zoom. And we've been archiving video edits of the classes on YouTube, but we thought we might try cutting down the 1 hour class to about 40 minutes for you, for the listeners of the Best Book Ever podcasts that might not be able to fit a midday class on a Thursday into your schedule. So I hope you enjoy listening to these as much as I enjoy teaching them. If you're interested to attend the class from wherever you are in the world in person, then stick around at the end of the podcast. I'll tell you how to register. Just like the podcast, it's absolutely free, and we'd love to have you. Hey everybody. Nice to see you all. I was trying to think of a song that we're going to talk about brokenness today, a very heavy topic. I was trying to think of a song with broken in the title. And all I could come up with that is that very not heavy, very fun Elton John. Who else was it? But Grease, you know how it is. Okay, so we are going to
Hey,
be
teacher.
today. Who's it?
Was Kiki
Say it again.
D.
Kiki Day, good. Thank you. Bob, good to have you here.
Kiki D. Kiki D.
Oh, Kiki D. Okay, you
D-E-E.
know what? Anyway, we'll figure it out in the chat. In the chat. Okay, so here's the we are going to be looking at the idea of brokenness today, but looking at a particular image of brokenness. That sort of comes up out of the commentary on the measurements of the Mishkan, of the tabernacle. Some of you may have read this essay this weekend, so you know the beginning of what's coming, this essay. But I will tell you that this is a great opportunity to do what I sort of had sort of intended to do with this class, which is to write an essay and then to be able to share the things that I just wasn't able to put into the essay. Because the truth is, I started this essay with the first text that we're going to look at today, but there's actually a whole backstory and a front story, that is to say, and people take up this image and continue it, continue to reflect on it through the ages. So, let's say a blessing, and then I'll kind of take us in to this first appearance of the broken measurements of the ark. That's where we're going to start. Okay, let's say a blessing. For those of us who have not had a chance to study Torah yet today, studying Torah is a mitzvah, and we make a blessing over it. Baruch atah Adonai, Eloheinu melech haolam, asher kidshanu b'mitzvotav v'tzivanu la'asok b'divrei Torah. Okay, so here's the source sheet for today, and we're going to start. The truth is, a lot of this stuff that we're going to look at today comes up first in Parshat Truma, because Parshat Truma is the parsha where we first begin to lay out the construction, the instructions for the construction of the Mishkan, the tabernacle, the traveling desert temple. But this week we repeat all of those instructions because, or the Torah repeats all those instructions because Moshe got them from God, and then Bezalel, the master builder, took those instructions and built the tabernacle. So this week we're looking at the building of the tabernacle, but that means that we are repeating tons of very detailed information, which in itself is a kind of a problem to be solved. Like, why does the Torah repeat all this information? But for our purposes, it actually is a good opportunity, especially in these parshot that are sort of non-narrative. It's sometimes difficult to figure out what are you going to talk about, this measurement or this measurement. So these the repetition actually gives us a chance to talk about something that maybe we missed last time. So let's take a look at the measurements of the ark, and you know the measurements of the tabernacle include measurements of the whole structure, the courtyard outside, the curtains, the planks. I mean, it's you know. I feel like many people have made the IKEA instruction manual joke because it feels like that. But there's something about the measurements of the ark itself. And when I say the ark, your ears should perk up, because that's not just anything in the tabernacle. That's the thing. That's the centerpiece. That is the Holy of Holies, right? In the Holy of Holies, that's what was there in the ark, and in the ark are the tablets, and that's as close as we get to some kind of contact with God, or at least some remnant of our contact with God at Mount Sinai. So, did I put in the chat? I don't think I did. Did I? No, I didn't. Okay, so here's here's the source sheet for today. And it's interesting. This is a different class, but the first thing that Moshe receives from God or describes is the Aron, but it's not the first thing that Bezalel builds. And there's all kinds of interesting Torah on the order that the Torah gives us these various parts of the Mishkan and why and what had to be built first and what's essential and what comes later. But that's, again, for a different class. In our Parsha, in Parshat Vayakhel, we come across the Ark sort of midway through. So here we are in chapter 37 of our Parsha, and we've been detailing. Here, let's just take a look a little bit at how it looks. Let me put it in English. So like you can see, like we've been detailing, you know, the eight planks and the two planks and, you know, on and on and on and on. And then we get to chapter 37 and we get the ark. And Bezalel made the ark of acacia wood. V'yas Bezalel et Aaron atzei shitim. And here are the measurements. Amatayim b'chetzi arko, 2.5 cubits long. V'ama v'chetzi rachbo, and a cubit and a half wide. V'ama v'chetzi komato, and a cubit and a half high. Now you will notice, it's just noticeable, striking if you're reading your Torah carefully, that all of those measurements are half measurements, or 2.5, 1.5. There are half measurements there, which is not that big a deal, except that this, it turns out, is the only object in the Torah that is entirely made up of half measurements. So that's notable. There are some other half measurements in the Mishkan, but this is the most important object in the Mishkan has half measurements all around. And that's gotta catch the eye, gotta catch the attention, because you always notice the ark, and there's something different about the measurements of the ark than everything else we've seen. Not just in the Mishkan, there are other cubit things. The word that we use in measuring lengths in the Bible is an ama, a cubit, which is like an ama is kind of like you know, a half an arm's length or something like that, like this. So that's like an ama, and so I'll translate it as cubits, but we're talking about amot. So that's what you'll hear in Hebrew. That's the plural, ama and amot. Okay, so so we've got these half measurements. That's curious. What do we make of that? And we begin with this short piece of commentary by one of my favorite commentators, the Baal HaTurim. The Baal HaTurim was Rabbi Yaakov ben Asher, who was born in Germany, but emigrated with his father, the Rosh, Rav Asher, one of the great sages of the medieval period, to Spain. And then the tour became one of the great sages of his generation, the Baal HaTurim. We call him the Baal HaTurim because that's the master of the columns. And he wrote a book called Arba Turim, The Four Columns, in which he organized all of Jewish law into four categories. And that book is monumentally important. And a lot of Jewish law follows forth from the tour. We just call it the tour, the column. And then we end up calling him the Baal HaTurim, the master of the columns. So he is mostly known for being a kind of master legalist, but he has this commentary on the Torah, which is so much fun because what he demonstrates is that he has a kind of savant-like mind, and he's always finding these little connections that nobody else sees, and often it's like gematrias, like adding up the numerology of Hebrew letters, or he'll do like the first letters in every word in this verse, if you take them all together, they make this word. You know, like he finds things like that all the time. So it's not surprising that he would hone in on the half measurements. But he says something here that will give us the image that will be the subject of our discussion today. So let's take a look at the commentary of the Baal HaTurim. And here we go. Okay, so the Baal HaTurim says 2.5 cubits long, 2.5 wide, and 1.5 high. And here he starts his commentary. Kol midotav hayu shvurot b'chatzaei amot. L'lamed shekomi shelomed Torah tzarich l'shaber u'lashpil atzmo. This is really the phrase. All of its measurements were broken, shvurot, into half measurements. So he was just sort of like speaking casually, like you break it into half, but no, the brokenness is that language is his point, because he says the halves are not just halves, they are broken halves, to teach you that anyone who learns Torah must break and lower themselves. Okay? Now, let's just first of all figure out what he is saying. You see the move he's made. He calls the half measurements broken measurements. And that is to teach you that anyone who learns Torah must break and lower themselves. Okay. So, you know, well, I want to take a minute to just think about, oh, like, what's the ethic there? Like, what does that mean? What is he trying to say? So Noah will help us get started.
Yeah, this is one of the more interesting commentaries, one that the Baal HaTurim is making it so that when we study Torah, we think we're completely whole when we're doing it. And Yom Kippur, we're obviously brokenhearted and trying to reach the most high plane to stand before God. And with that, being brokenhearted, studying Torah, we are open to all that we can take in because our heart's already broken open.
Okay, beautifully put, all of that. You did something very basic and important, which is to say, the first kind of layer of interpretation here suggests humility as a virtue. That is, we have to be we have to break ourselves, to humble ourselves, to be kind of that seems like the language here, to be lowered and humble and broken in order to be open to receive Torah. And it's like Noah says on Yom Kippur, in order to receive tshuva, in order to receive God. Actually, maybe this is a big concept, that there's a certain amount of self, I don't know, is it self-punishment? I mean, that's part of what I want to talk about today, because to say to humble oneself, to lower oneself, that's not surprising language from our religious tradition, but to say l'shaber, to break oneself, that's pretty harsh. And that also is not unheard of, but it's pretty harsh. Now, let me give you one reference point. I was not sure whether I would, I put two, way at the end of this source sheet, you'll find two additional sources, just like brokenness texts that I always think about. And I wondered if they would come up, but Noah's first comment here reminds me of one of the kind of classic texts of brokenness has become the classic text of brokenness because Noah used a phrase that wasn't there in the Baal HaTurim. Noah kept saying, with the ark behind his head, by the way, I'm now realizing, Noah kept saying, brokenhearted, brokenhearted. Ah, now that's interesting. Is it breaking our hearts or breaking ourselves? And is there a difference? Because I feel a difference, right? When I say, oh, broken, you're brokenhearted, I'm brokenhearted. There's something about that that feels like it's hard, but it's tender. And it's there's something you've really opened yourself. To be broken, though, that could be really dangerous. All right, so which one are we talking about? But there is a very famous text on brokenheartedness that is given over in the name of the Baal Shem Tov. And I'm just going to like, it was like something I was like saving, see if it would come up, but it's already come up. Let's take a look at it here. This is an example of the kind of language that I think that here, additional text down at the bottom, the kind of language that I think that Noah was giving us. This is a story about the Baal Shem Tov recorded in another book, the Or Yesharim, you can see in 1884. After the shofar blasts, the Baal Shem Tov said, oh, so the whole story, I'm sorry. There's a little backstory here, which is there's a guy who learned all of the like different notes in the shofar and how to do them exactly. And then he lost, he had all his notes and he lost the paper where he was going to, and then all of a sudden he's like, and he had to blow the shofar and he was so brokenhearted that he wasn't able to do it well. And he just felt crestfallen. And the Baal Shem Tov said to him the following, or so the story goes. After the shofar blast, the Baal Shem Tov said to him, in the palace of the king, there are many rooms and compartments. And for every room, there is a different special key. But the master key of all is the axe with which it is possible to open all the locks on all the gates. Oh, you just have an axe. You don't even need a key. So it is with a ram's horn. The secret meanings are the keys, like all the little notes you learned. But the master key that opens all the gates is the broken heart. When a person truly breaks his heart before God, he can enter into all the gates in the palace of the King above all kings, the Holy Blessed One. I mean, that's such a great, you know, I tear up a little bit when I read that. Like, it's like, wow, the master key is the broken heart and we can break through all the gates here. Okay, so that's one way to think about what we're talking about here is that you have to be humble and break your heart open a little bit so that you can be vulnerable and ready to receive. That's like a beautiful language of sort of inner self observation. We're gonna move into other interpretations, but before we do, I can't help myself. This is a little bit of a side story here, but there's a curiosity that I think you'll find interesting in this, in the history of this language that the Baal Shem, that the, now I'm getting confused. There's the Baal Shem Tov, the founder of Hasidut in the 1700s. And then there's the Baal HaTurim, the commentator we first looked at in the 14th century, 1300s. And the Baal HaTurim's language that all of the measurements of the ark were broken. That language, where did he get that? Like, where did he get that language? Because he often, like Rashi, our most famous commentator, he's often quoting earlier rabbinic sources. And in fact, like, I couldn't find any earlier rabbinic sources of this language. But take a look at a contemporary of his. This is a contemporary of the Baal HaTurim, also lived in Spain, also wrote a commentary on the Torah. Rabbeinu Bachya here. Lived in Zaragoza, Spain. So actually not, you know, I think it's like a couple hundred miles from where the Baal HaTurim lived in Toledo. So the Rabbeinu Bachya says, our rabbis, Zichronam Livracha, of blessed memory, said that all of the measurements of the ark were broken. From this, we must learn that a student of Torah must be humble and their heart must break inside of them. Okay, so there's that language of brokenness. And the message here is, you know, the first layer of understanding that Noah gave us. It's about humility, okay? And in fact, he uses the same language that Noah used, that their heart must break, right? Not just that they break themselves, but that their heart must break. But what's interesting about this is that he's quoting it in the name of our rabbis. That language here, over here in the what's it called? Acronym is Razal, Rabbeinu Zichronam Livracha, our rabbis, or Chachmeinu Zichronam Livracha, our sages. That's a classic phrase that means the rabbis of the Talmud and the Midrash, the earlier rabbis, the first rabbis. So it sounds like Rabbeinu Bachya is saying, we have a tradition, the rabbis said this, and frankly, sounds like something the rabbis would say. It sounds like their kind of language. But as far as as far as we know, the Baal HaTurim is the first one to actually say this. And I don't know if somehow it passed down in, you know, from one end of Spain to the other, or it's just in the air, or maybe there was a rabbinic tradition of the broken measurements. So that's a little bit of a side story here. Like, where do we even get this? So for those of you who are kind of nerdy like I am about like finding the original source, this one, there's some mystery behind it, but as far as we know, the Baal HaTurim is the first source. Okay, so just FYI. I see another hand up. So maybe let's hear a little more on these first two commentaries, the Baal HaTurim and Rabbeinu Bachya. The humility, the breaking of the heart. What does it mean that in order to be a student of Torah, we have to be not just humble, but a little bit broken? Ron?
Yeah. You'll probably break me off here because I want to know if anybody brings up the idea that, of course, the measurements were something and a half or broken because the tablets that were going to be stored inside the ark were broken. And the ark itself was paid for with half shekels.
Ooh, boy, that was a great comment, Ron. I do not resent that comment. I'm glad for it because you made suddenly a lot of great connections. Here's the other text that I was saving and not sure if I would mention. Another classic text on brokenness. Thank you to Ron for reminding us that there is another legend. Now, we don't have the rabbinic legend of the broken measurements, but maybe this is where the Torah is getting it from. We have another legend. Let's scroll to the bottom here. We looked at this, I think, in a recent class. Rav Yosef teaches in a Braita, Tani Rav Yosef, Milamed Shehaluchot Vishivre Luchot, this verse that he's commenting on, take the tablets which you broke. So take them and what? Put them in the ark. This teaches that both the tablets and the broken tablets are placed in the ark. We learn from this, now he has a little lesson which may or may not be relevant to us, but from that we learn that one may not degrade a Torah scholar who has forgotten his learning due to circumstances beyond his control. Okay, in other words, the Ark, which has these half measurements, Ron's right, by tradition also has broken tablets, the whole tablets and the broken, remember Moses smashed the first tablets, those went in too, and so with the whole tablets. And this is the much more famous, I think, image of brokenness around Torah. The broken tablets. And what does that represent? That we carried the broken tablets and that they were meaningful to us. And even though they were broken, they were not discarded. And that's, so how do we look at broken things like a person whose memory has been broken? But they still, that the shards still matter, okay? So there's another Torah reference point. And Ron gave us a third, which is we just happen to be reading this week, Parshat Shkalim, the section from, it turns out it's from last week's Torah portion, but it's not usually read on its Torah portion. It's read as a separate selection. Parshat Shkalim details the donation of a half shekel that every fighting aged person would donate to the tabernacle, and it was a half shekel each. So there's like, Ron's right, there's a lot of halves going on in the, a lot of broken measurements, so to speak, going on in the sort of the realm of Torah. And yeah, it's starting to feel like there's something here that the Torah wants to say in using the half measurement. You know, what is the meaning of the half measurement? And the Baal HaTurim's got one answer, but we could speculate. What is the meaning of the half measurement? Let's hear a couple more. Okay, so I don't know quite what to do with that, but let's see what we would do. We do with it here. Let's turn to Jen.
There's something wonderfully dialectical about that, right? Because what he's saying is you can't have wholeness without brokenness, or brokenness without wholeness. But they both depend on each other. And the sort of image that comes to mind that's been in my mind this whole time is that thought puzzle of, if you try to cross a room by traveling by halves every time, you will approach the wall, but there will always be a microscopic space between you and the wall. You will approach and become close, but also always be apart. And Noah put this in the chat, and I'm right on the same path as Noah, where like the biggest gap or break is between us and God. And the reason why we have a relationship with God is because we're constantly trying to return to one another, but never can fully do so. If we were ever to fully get to God, we would just be buried within that. We would no longer have a relationship because we would be one. But if we never ever approached God, we would always be avoiding or running away from that relationship. So truly having a relationship with God is to have wholeness and brokenness, and brokenness and wholeness.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. I mean, okay, great. So now that takes us to a really interesting place. I appreciate that, Jen, because yeah, I think you're right. Like, intuitively, if the arc is half and we are supposed to be half, and arc is broken and we're the Torah is broken in a way and we're broken, like there is something about all of this imagery that suggests we're gonna meet God halfway, right? God, like, God is half of the picture and we are half of the picture, and like we need to find the like a way to fit into God. Like, it's very easy to speak of God as the whole and we are the incomplete and that's all there is to it. But on some level, I feel like, you know, I didn't see this in any of the commentaries, but if the arc is halved in order to teach us to be halved, well, that's great, but that still makes the arc that holds the Torah a halved thing. And that is a little bit like God has halved God's self. God has control, and this is not, you know, a totally off the range thing to say, because we speak of God contracting God's self in this tradition in order to make room for humanity. We speak of God being partners with us in the work of creation. So we are half and God is half. Now, that chas v'shalom, such a thing could not possibly be. God is not half. And yet God is having something that is sacred in order to teach us that our halfness will, you know, can meet God halfway. So that's, there's something really powerful about that. Now the two halves that make a whole might not just be two halves of myself, although yes, that there's one way of thinking about it. I'm looking to create a holistic inner life, but maybe actually I need the Torah to complete me. I need God to complete me. And maybe, and this is the craziest part, maybe God needs me for some kind of completion. Right? Because after all, God's not going to keep the Torah, right? Angels don't keep the Torah. We keep the Torah. So we have, like, our little half of this picture is important, right? Okay. Allison.
What you're just talking about makes me think about magnets. And I wish that I remembered it more clearly, but I have these like half-formed memories of like middle school science projects where I like learned about magnets. There's something about like a half that also is like wanting to be whole. You know, like it seems that there's some sort of, it's not just a half, but like a half of what? And maybe there's something in there that contains within it like a certain type of a yearning, which is really interesting to me. And just to like bring Aviva Zornberg back into the conversation again, I think sure. It's so
always happy to have her on board.
Yeah, I mean, I think her perspective is just like so interesting that like we could really use these stories as like a lens into interpersonal relationships. And I think like these insights about like brokenness being connected to wisdom are just so deep. That like when we're really wise, we realize that we don't have a full picture. And, you
Yeah,
know,
I love what you said at the beginning, and I don't think we've really articulated this fully yet, so thank you for doing so. The half as a measurement is suggestive just in itself, you know? Like, why are we making such a big deal about, like, okay, so it's not there or there, but it's in the middle. But there's something about when you hear 50%, that means something. One half means it has a kind of, oh, so there's something equal on both sides. It's right in the middle. It's a division. There's something about that measurement that in its nature suggests all of these ideas. And I think that that's what we do with it is then interpretation. But the idea that, like, I see a point right in the middle and that means something, that finding that point right in the middle is meant to say, it wasn't 3/4, you know, it was like the half. And that makes us think a little bit, what does the half mean? What does it mean to meet in the middle? What does it mean to be in the middle? What does it mean to be divide? All of these things that we're saying come up out of the very symbolic nature of that particular measurement. David Kurtz.
Well, I almost put my hand down because you kind of took what I was going to say, but I'll amplify it a little bit because my favorite character is in this parsha, it's Bezalel. And so here we have we're for the first time, the Israelites are now going to be asked to create. And this partnership and all these measurements, this isn't a very well formed thought, but it's just, there's something about you are in partnership with God in creating the original creator. And, you know, it's never going to be perfect. It's never there's going to be, and be careful about with the art, like what you do with it. And there's kind of implicit warnings about it. Could it go into idolatry and all these kinds of things? So there's a responsibility and a craft that's being introduced here that I absolutely love. And it's certainly with that character. And I think I just want to take it in that direction. Take the parsha kind of in that direction.
Yeah. I appreciate that because that we haven't really, we started somewhere near there to thinking about like humility, but there's something more than just humility. There's a sense that this is like, you should approach the Ark and the Torah with a sense of awe and a little trembling because this is big, savage stuff, jagged stuff. And, you know, like you have to contract yourself, diminish yourself a little bit in order to be able to come into this realm of Torah where so much power and so many parts. And so, you know, like to just come and say, I'm me and this is who I am in all of my fullness. So accept me as I am. And this is the Torah I will take. And this is the Torah. No, it's like, you have to break yourself down a little bit. You have to be a little bit, there's something about that first language of the Torah, which is scary language, just to break yourself, that the way you're putting it is like, it's not about suffering as much as it's about an understanding that you cannot be fully whole and then expect to enter into this realm because this realm is perilous and you will have a kind of, you know, you'll be formed, shaped, maybe completed by the experience, but you have to enter into it with some space for that to happen. Yeah. Leah Matsui.
For me, there's something here that goes like this. Golden calf, okay, and to make amends for that, to make amends and to offer further guidance, we're going to have the Ark. And then we're going to have who was the chief henchman of the golden calf. For me, was Aaron. What's his new job? You're going to be the high priest. But watch it, buddy. We're not playing around. We're not done. We are not complete because your two sons are going to go. And still we have, it's like danger, high voltage. Still we have this. I don't think we're ever complete. We never... we never get a handle on it. We always have to be really careful.
Yeah. Yeah. I keep saying it's a little scary, that language of breaking ourselves. And so I don't want to lean too heavy into it because I think some of us feel broken enough. So it's like, I want to be gentle, but let's take it seriously for a minute. Like, maybe you have to break it. Like this, you have to be hard with yourself sometimes. You have to push yourself down. You have to break yourself down sometimes. This is not child's play. You know, this is not easy stuff. This Torah is, and that in itself is, you know, that's a startling thing to say about Torah. Torah has a power and can break and damage, can, you know, like if you're not careful with this, as Aaron was not careful with it at the golden calf, as we can all, you know, as we talked a few weeks ago, we talked about the power of the ark. Touching the ark could like annihilate you. Why? Because it's not just a simple thing. It's a dangerous thing. And you have to be aware of that danger and be willing a little bit to retreat from it, lest you be damaged by it. Okay. All right, we're coming to a close here, but I think that before we do, I especially if someone hasn't spoken yet, I'd love to hear just like, there were lots of lessons in here. All right, let's just review kind of what we saw. There were lots of interpretations. The Baal HaTurim himself, of these half measurements, Baal HaTurim himself emphasized the breaking of oneself, which we've been focused on for the last few comments, and lowering ourselves. And Rabbeinu Bachya picked up on that and used the language of a broken heart and humility. The Kli Yakar focused mostly on wisdom and to encourage us to remember that we do not know everything. And that is the basis of our Torah study, is that we seek to learn because we do not know. And the person who knows most is the person who knows that they do not know, okay? That sort of Socratic statement. And then finally, we looked at the Zera Kodesh, who said that you have to have kindness, but also rage. You have to have pride, but also humility. You have to, if you want to be whole, you have to, what does brokenness mean for him? I think this is really interesting because he's using brokenness somewhat differently. Like, you have to have lots of parts. Yourself has to, you have to acknowledge that yourself is like sort of shattered into all these parts, and all of them are needed. All of them come to bear in the service of God. Okay, so I just wonder, like, do any of these particularly resonate with you, or would you take this in a different direction? It's if anyone hasn't had a chance to speak yet, and I think I see Kate's hand up.
Yeah, I don't know why it's Matt. I know this is very personal. I hope it relates, but I think everything we're saying is that when you're particularly in services or anytime the Torah is open, you're saying Hineni and you're bringing every piece of yourself to it. And hopefully you're getting every piece back. And in the beginning, when I first became a Jew, I would cry when the Ark was closed after the Torah service, you know, and I'd have to remind myself, no, it comes back. You know, you can have that experience again and again and again. And I'm going back decades since I converted. And for me, it's when I'm really paying attention, it's Hineni. Here I am. I am broken. I am whole in many pieces. And I need this to get through my life. You know, Torah is my guiding force at this point in my life anyway. You know, it may not have been before, but the combination of Torah and you and Rabbi Brous and sermons and how life is at this moment, I don't know how I would get through it without it. So
beautifully put, Kate, but not just beautiful, but like really, yeah, it really resonates. And I'm glad, I think we should end there because I'm glad that someone articulated that. We haven't yet, but that in some ways, you know, like that's the message that is most intuitive. Like, come to the Torah broken, and hopefully you will be made whole in some way or healed a little bit. Like, that's the, you know, if God is meeting us halfway, then maybe we will leave. We must have ourselves, or we must admit that we are broken or brokenhearted. Yeah, it's not just a struggle. It's not just, oh, so that I can take Torah in and I'll just suffer through Torah. No, like we're here to be healed, to be fixed, to be made whole. And maybe somehow the Torah will fit our broken parts and God will fit our broken parts. And we in community, all of us broken, will come together and be klal, a whole klal Yisrael. So may we find that with each other, and may we find that with God and with Torah, that sense of wholeness. So maybe we learn to break ourselves a little bit, but may we, as Kate suggests, find in the end a sense of wholeness. So wishing you all a good Shabbos. Thanks so much for your learning. I'll see you next week. Okay, that's it. A taste of our weekly Parsha class. I want to thank everyone who came to the class, some of whose voices you may have heard today, some you didn't because the podcast has been edited. So just want to thank everybody. And speaking of editing, I want to thank also our editor, Vera Blossom, for her great work. If you'd like to join our class sometime and come and join our circle of Torah geeks, you can find us again, Thursdays, 12 p.m. online at ikar.org. That's ikar.org. And if you go to the calendar, then you can find a Zoom link and just click in. And in the section on the website that we keep our classes, you can, if you click on Parsha Study, you'll find all of our archived classes and source sheets and everything we discuss there. So if you're looking for a regular Parsha class, I'd love to see you. And in the meantime, I will talk to you next week.